What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
The results of the National Assessment of Education Progress, or NAEP, are out, also known as the Nation's Report Card. The NAEP tests across three categories, science, math, and reading. This year, nationally, 31% of 8th graders performed at or above proficient in science, 22% of 12th graders performed at or above proficient in math, and 35% of 12th graders performed at or above proficient. Across the board, students performed at lower levels than prior to the COVID pandemic, and is the case every single time we do these tests. Students of color and poor students lag far behind their white and Asian and more wealthy peers. The test scores for the country in California are a continuance, at least that's what the things I've been reading. We've got an expert that's going to course correct me if need be, of a decades-long downward drift. We're joined by Kitty Kelly Epstein, college professor, activist, and host of Education Today on KPFA. Good morning, Kitty.
Good morning.
Kitty, there's all sorts of things to say about and the debates, right, to have around testing. We will. Like, I'm going to give you that we're going to have that conversation. But I think, I know for me as a parent, it was important for me to understand the tests themselves. So talk about these four bands of achievement, right? And I'm putting achievement in quotes at which kids can score when they basic, below basic, proficient, and advanced. What does that mean? Like, if a parent sees that their kid is below basic, what does that mean?
That means that below basic actually was never a category until so many students started scoring that way. It's supposed to be basic, advanced, you know, and proficient. But below basic means that the students haven't done what the test considers to be the minimal amount of education and knowledge in that particular field. And in the case of fourth graders, for example, on the reading test in California, there are over 40% students are below basic in California on the fourth grade reading test. So it is something for people to think about and wonder about. And I do have a bunch of things to say about why I think it turns out that way.
Part of me feels like I should just be quiet and just let you sort of go. And then if I have an extra question, I'll get in there. I mean, I think you know that I was brought here to do education advocacy to the A to G campaign. I don't know if you know that or not. That's how I got to Oakland.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We won that campaign in LA and we won it here. Not that it made a difference there or here. People still aren't getting those classes. But anyway, for reading, that means, just so folks are saying, like, for reading, that means that students are unable to use the text in the excerpt that they're giving to understand what is happening, right? That's right. What it means. But they can't comprehend what they're reading.
Right.
Yeah.
Although there are things to say about the tests themselves, and people might want to take a look at the tests because you can look at some of the items online. And like all tests in the United States, the tests themselves privilege those who are more affluent. And this actually, people would also be interested in the fact that this all began in Oakland more than 100 years ago with Lewis Terman, a Stanford professor, a leader in the eugenics movement, who began the standardized testing with his IQ test, which was intended to show white and more affluent people to be, quote, smarter. And these tests are not his tests, but there's a lot of similarity in the kind of assumptions that they make. So it's a really important thing for people to know. We had a very interesting story and a horrible story about Oakland. But I think, you know, as to the reasons, so the first reason that you will read what many people have put out, experts and so on, is that it has to do with phones, cell phones in schools.
Green
the phones should be gone out of schools. I completely agree with that. I agree with people who are, you know, doing something so that the kids don't have phones in the classroom all the time, because I visit lots of teachers, and teachers who are doing a very good job of teaching, there are still kids somewhere in the room on their phones and not really paying attention to the lesson. And that's, you know, it's just not workable. So schools need to work with parents. They need to have meetings with the kids. They need to do all kinds of stuff, but something has to happen about the phones. And that is true. However, the thing you won't read so much about is the thing that has to do with the increase in inequality in the country. So in the period around 1968 to 1973, where there was less economic inequality, there's always been huge economic inequality, but there was less then. And the test scores were not decreasing. The test scores that are decreasing and have been since that time are not the ones of the kids at the higher level and those kids from more affluent families. Those haven't gone down at all. The tests that have gone down consistently have been those students at the bottom. And there's an absolute correlation in the U.S. between test scores and family wealth. So as there's a differentiation in family wealth, increasingly, the test scores continue to go down for those at the bottom. So that's just an absolute reality, and that's a reality of our society as a whole and something that has to be fought in a holistic type of way. So, and those statistics are clear. They're not something that you're going to be told all the time, but that those are clear and there is a clear correlation between the two.
I mean, I actually was just talking to the last guest when we were talking about, you know, the pandemic of houselessness in Oakland and the country, you know, so I work six jobs and I have forever to just do what like a two person, you know, wider, wealthier yeah. family do with one job in order to support their kids at a particular level. And that's right. That's a privilege, luxury, whatever that I have, as bananas as that sounds. To work six jobs. But that's the difference between a parent being home to support their kid is where I'm going, right? To are you getting your homework done? Talk to me about your day. What's happening in your classroom? And a parent that's leaving the house at 6 o'clock in the morning and getting home at midnight.
Yeah. That's true.
Go ahead.
There are things you can see in the educational system that correspond with these issues about family wealth. And one of them is that we know there is very clear evidence that African-American students, for example, do better with African-American teachers, mm-hmm. whatever wealth level they're at. So the wealth level is not going to go away, but if there were more Black teachers, the kids would do better. And there's actually a study, a very interesting study, that shows that all students of all ethnicities prefer their African-American and Latino teachers to their white teachers. This is a nationwide zillions of, you know, when I'm a white teacher, I'm not saying that I was kind of halfway good, and I'm sure there's other people who are too. But the fact is that when they surveyed these kids in this massive hundreds of thousands of kids, all the kids, including the white kids, preferred their Black and Latino teachers. So I figured the next day they would run out and really work on getting a whole bunch of Black and Latino teachers. And yes, guess what? That didn't happen. Yeah. Because actually there are a lot of barriers that keep Black and Latino people out of teaching, which include being expected to work for a year for free as a student teacher, taking a bunch of irrelevant tests that have nothing to do with whether you can get along with kids, and so on. So that is one factor that I don't know if we're going to fix the wealth gap anytime soon, but one thing that could be fixed very quickly would be to have more African-American and Latino teachers in the classroom, which would do something good for the students who are doing the worst at those tests.
Katie Kelly, what are the common core standards? We have those, yes, in California, and do they have any impact?
The NAEP tests are not based on the Common Core standards. And so, you know, that all gets kind of weird out there too. The Common Core standards are, you know, because of the way the U.S. educational system is put together, I've never been hot for a lot of mandates, but there are a lot of reasonable things in the standards. And if there were a little more concentration in testing on actual facts, you know, like the things you would learn if you studied the Common Core standards, you know, but the tests they're not facts-based. They're all the kind of maneuvering with your mind that, you know, I'd like some facts-based tests that, you know, I'd like a kid to know whether Molly is in Africa or South America. They're not learning that in school, and they're not being tested on anything factual like that. So our kids know no geography. So those standards are a little bit better than what the usual tests are based on.
The American school system, and this might be an outdated thing to say, but it created really around industrialization, right? To create workers, not necessarily thinkers, not necessarily, right? Still true, and is that part of the irrelevancy? And kids are, I mean, my daughter did great in school. I was very blessed. I was very lucky. I checked her about her homework once, and she was like, I got this. And she did. And she was astute enough to be like, this has nothing to do with what's happening out there.
Yeah, that's true. So, the U.S. educational system was set up, yes, around industrialization, and one of the important periods was when there started being a lot of immigration and a lot of student and then child labor laws, so that all the kids were essentially going to be on the street. And, the rich people didn't want all the kids on the street. This is the same period as Lewis Terman. So they were blessed by the fact that Lewis Terman, this eugenicist from Stanford, created the IQ test so that they could separate the kids out because they wanted everybody in school, but they didn't want everybody sitting next to their white middle and upper class kids. So they said, oh, wow, this is great. We'll give this test to everybody, and then we can put these kids over here and these kids over here. And they'll be all be in school and off the street, but we won't have them all dealing with each other. So the test was made. It was first implemented in Oakland and used for the purposes of tracking immediately. This is around 1920. And then it spread, immediately across the country. Detroit and all the other big cities were using it right away. And ever since then, that has been the way the U.S. educational system has been set up, with one test or another putting kids in different kinds of categories. It's not, it was tracking directly for a long time. Now it's not tracking. It's a bunch of other ways. It's like being in an urban school where you don't have teachers. There's a teacher shortage. Where do the teachers go? If you don't have a math teacher who knows any math, you're not going to learn math. And there aren't math teachers. So you could test the kids on math. They didn't get any math because they didn't have teachers. So none of these problems that are solvable get solved because the system is too much connected to the US economic system.
I've got just a little bit, like 90 seconds with you, so I'm going to read this quickly and let you respond. Education Secretary Linda McMahon said the scores show why the Trump administration wants to give states more control of education spending. Quote, despite spending billions annually on numerous K through 12 programs, the achievement gap is widening and more high school seniors are performing below the basic benchmark in math and reading than ever before. End quote. Your response, Katie?
So I'm not hot for national for the national way of operating schools, but what they really mean by that is they want to take away money, and we don't need to take away money. We need more money. So it's all baloney what she's saying, but it is true that the federal government interference has not been particularly helpful.
Anything I have not asked you that you want folks to know before I bid you adieu?
I really think people should work on these things and should work on it with a holistic understanding that it's black and brown kids who are being hurt the worst. And the ways to deal with that particular and immediately is who gets to teach and whether there are enough teachers.
Katie Kelly Epstein, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's
Thank
good to see
you.
you.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.